your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Though I know that people who follow the economic conditions and the stock market would prefer that I declared another grim day in this grimmest nation on God's green earth. No. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just closed. And for once, there was a great sense of relief when the bell finally rang. The Dow just collapsed in the last half hour. And down almost 1,200 points. It is the biggest one-day point drop in the stock market ever. This week, today, down 1,193 points. The stock market, unless there is some kind of sudden recovery tomorrow, which no one seems to expect, the stock market will be experiencing its worst week since the financial crisis back in 2008. That's in 12 years. This is not something that you want to see happen in the middle of a presidential campaign when the president is campaigning for re-election based on the strong economy. To make sense of all of this and to try to get some sense of what happens next, let me go to Stephen Moore. And I'm very privileged to have him on the line. Steve, of course, wrote for years on economy and public policy for the Wall Street Journal. He is a distinguished visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He is the author of the best-selling book, Trumponomics. And he has been an informal, never paid, but informal advisor to the president in shaping his tax cuts and other economic policies. Steve, what do you make of this? Is this all coronavirus stuff, or is it something else?
Well, hi, Michael. And by the way, you've asked me an almost impossible task, which is to make sense of this, because it's hard to make sense of this, frankly. I mean, you know, I thought the president gave a very reassuring speech yesterday about the steps that the U.S. government is taking to try to contain this virus. And, there are some new cases of this that are troubling that have actually hit the United States. But, look, this is still a very small number of people, compared to the tens of thousands of people who get just the normal flu every year. So I guess I have to say I'm a little bit surprised by this, massive sell-off, because the market's down, 10, 11, 12% this week, which is a massive sell-off. And those losses are in the trillions and trillions of dollars. So I'm just waiting, I'm just waiting and praying and hoping for some good news on the containment on the virus, because I do think, Michael, that once we get that, sense of, maybe there's some containment here, then I do think the market will bounce back to life. But I can't tell you that it's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next month or 2 or 3 months. We just don't know.
Okay, we're in the year of a presidential election where everything is political. And I assume you agree with it's not just conventional wisdom, it's just common sense. If we are in the midst of a bear market and a down economy and declining rates of growth, or even in a recession, it's going to be very tough for the president to win re-election, don't you think?
I do. I think that, 2 weeks ago, if you'd asked me, I said there was a, 75% chance that Trump would be reelected.
I agree with
that.
And,
by the way, it's just so interesting because, I think absent some kind of black swan event, something you just can't see coming, Trump looks good. I mean, the economy's performed brilliantly for the last 3 years under Trump. And I did worry about, some kind of natural disaster or some kind of, an international event or, the outbreak of a war somewhere or some kind of public health issue. And we have this. So, and Trump's case for reelection has always been, I rebuilt this American economy, and we've got one of the best economies in 30, 40 years, and it's tough to beat, a president, regardless of what party, if they have prosperity. Now, look, who knows what the economy is going to look like 3, 6, 9 months from now. But this is certainly not happening at a good time for the Republicans, and it does open the door for, you know, a Democrat to take office. And I want to say something else that I think is important. One of the things to worry about for Trump is this, what I call the negative feedback loop. So, for example, if who is the front runner is in the Democratic Party right now? It's clearly Bernie Sanders. I think, you know, you don't have to be a, you know, wild-eyed, you know, conservative free market person to know that Bernie Sanders would be really, really bad for the stock market and for the economy with his dingbat ideas. And so the problem is that if the market starts to perceive that Bernie Sanders actually has a realistic chance of winning, then what do you think the market's going to do?
Yeah, and again, this is a vicious cycle because the market falls.
A negative feedback cycle, and it's something to worry about. I mean, it happened a little bit in 2008 when, you know, the market was crashing, and then every time the market crashed, you know, Obama's chance of getting elected got higher, and then, you know, the markets got even more concerned. So, you know, look, it's a little early to be calling all of that, but because we are still, you know, 9 or 10 months away from an election, but nonetheless, it is something to think about.
Yeah, I know that there is one school of thought that argues, and we were talking about this earlier before you came on, Stephen, that there is such a thing as a stock market correction. Everybody knew a correction mm-hmm. was overdue, and a correction mm-hmm. is normally about 10% decline, right? And
that's right.
So if you were to give your best guess, do you think that we are now, well, we're there, we're beyond 10%. Is that what we're dealing with, a correction which is turned around fairly quickly, or is this the beginning of a bear market?
No, I don't buy. Well, I mean, I'm not sure I completely understand your question. Like, this happened, this big stock market sell-off happened for two reasons. The vast majority of it was because of the virus. But the second reason, in my opinion, that this stock market really taken a hit this week is because of what happened over the weekend that people have kind of forgotten about, because it seems like 10 years ago. But Bernie Sanders surprisingly became the huge front runner for the Democratic nomination. And that's not good for the markets. And I think the combination of those things have caused this, I don't know if you want to call it a correction or sell-off or bloodbath, but my point is, and this is the most important thing I would make to your listeners who are investors, which I think is most of your listeners, I would not sell right now. I would not sell your stocks, folks. I don't go in your 401k, sell in your retirement funds and start selling stocks. And I'm not saying that this sell-off is over, because it may, we might see some more weeks of really bad. But I'm saying, if you're holding on to stocks for 2 or 5 or 10, 15 years, you don't want to sell in a down market. It's just a bad strategy. And so I'm not buying stocks quite yet. But by the way, if we get some more sell-offs, I will start buying stocks, because stocks are really pretty cheap right now.
Wow, suddenly they're pretty cheap. Speaking to Stephen Moore, a fellow at the Heritage Foundation and an economic advisor to President Trump. Steve, there's so much of this that is deeply political, and you're talking about the markets responding in part to Bernie Sanders ending up winning the Nevada caucuses and winning so overwhelmingly. Right now, all the polling shows Joe Biden winning the South Carolina primary. Now, let me play this out with you. There are tons and tons of stories of conservative activists and Republicans involved in what they are calling Operation Chaos, which is something that Rush Limbaugh tried way back in 2008 in Pennsylvania, is lousing up the Democratic primary by actually getting Republicans in an open primary to go out and vote for Bernie Sanders. I think what you're saying is absolutely correct, which is if Bernie Sanders upsets Joe Biden in the South Carolina primary and ends up actually winning the South Carolina primary, that's going to be a hammer blow against the markets, don't you think?
I think it'll certainly be negative. Now, you know, the fact is that I don't think one of the reasons that Rush Limbaugh and others want, and by the way, I'm for Bernie Sanders winning the primary too, because I just think he's very easy for Trump to beat. But on the other hand, even if it's at, say, 30 or 35% that Bernie Sanders would win, you know, the markets are going to price that risk in, right? It will, the markets will adjust the prices of stocks based on, you know, what those probabilities are. So, you know, it's just hard to say right now. There's so many uncertainties about where the Democrats are headed, about where, how serious this virus will be. And I just think my advice to people is, you know, don't panic. Don't buy into the panic, because that is oftentimes the worst time to sell. And hold pat.
What would you say? And again, I was actually just speaking to someone during the break who was wondering if this is a good time to buy, because the market is just is gone down well over 3,000 points so far this week. Could this be a good time to jump into the market?
Well, I'm not an expert on this. I really am not. So I don't think people should necessarily take my advice. That's my disclaimer. But I'm not quite there yet, because I do think we could see some more sell-off. You know, so, you know, you might want to wait another week and see what happens. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't sell, whether I would buy or not. No, I'm advising holding pat.
Okay. A colleague of yours, Kevin Warsh, who was a former member of the Federal Reserve Board of Directors, and for people who don't know, you were designated
right.
by President Trump for the Federal Reserve Board, and unfortunately, I wish, of course, and I think many of us do, that you had been confirmed and gone on the Fed. You didn't.
Thank you.
But there's a piece by Kevin Warsh today in the Wall Street Journal that says the Fed can't wait to respond to the coronavirus. But I am not sure what right now, given how low the interest rates remain, what exactly can the Fed do?
So I have to confess, I haven't read Kevin's piece yet. But it's funny, because what you're describing is very similar to a piece that I just wrote that has not been published yet. But I do believe that we have what's going on in the world right now is, so you've got a global panic. This isn't just happening in the United States. I mean, stock markets are crashing all over the world right now, especially in China and in Asian markets. And so whenever you've got a situation like this where there's a global panic, the investors buy two things. Do you know what those two things are, Michael?
Gold.
Gold, yes.
And?
Dollars. Dollars.
Did you say towels?
I'm sorry, dollars.
US oh, dollars. Okay, I thought you said towels.
So people,
okay,
people
go ahead.
Get into dollars because they still view us as kind of a safe haven, right? And they buy gold. And so you're seeing the gold price has gone up, you know, not hugely, but it's
yeah,
gone
it's,
up.
Yeah, well, it got like more than $100, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone up, and that's a flight to fear. People buy gold when they're afraid, and you'll probably, I actually think you'll see continued rises in the gold price. But they also buy dollars. And so the dollar is very strong right now, Michael. And what's going on is globally, people are getting, they just want to hold on to something that's safe, and they view the dollar as safe. That means there's a big global demand for dollars. Okay, you following me?
I am.
Okay. And so what happens is if there's everybody wants to buy dollars, and the Fed doesn't accommodate that by printing dollars or getting dollar, what we call dollar liquidity into the market, then all of a sudden prices actually start to fall because you've got a shortage of dollars in the world economy. So I don't know if this is the reasoning that Kevin Warsh made, but I absolutely think the Fed has to inject more dollar liquidity into the economy. And right now, they should have done this 2 weeks ago, frankly. And that would provide, you know, and by the way, you could do that in a lot of ways. Not just necessarily interest rates, they could do another QE. But the point is that would, if look what's happened to the price of silver, look what's happened to the price of oil, gas, agriculture commodities, they're falling rapidly. This, you know, that's kind of a negative thing for the economy. So, yes, the Fed needs to put more dollar liquidity in the markets, and they need to do it immediately, and they should not wait until March to do it. They should do it tomorrow.
Okay. In terms of the political intersection here, the Democrats are voting in South Carolina. They have Super Tuesday coming up there. I know that there is a great deal of hope on the part of people who truly fear a Bernie Sanders candidacy. I think you and I may disagree a little bit, because I think it's it's too much of a risk to say, oh, it'll be great to nominate Bernie Sanders because that'll assure Trump's reelection. I mean, Trump's election, it seems to me, is a demonstration. People should never be sure of what the outcome is going to be. And particularly if we are dealing with a down economy, the idea that Bernie, who's so angry at the millionaires and the billionaires and the people who are ripping us off and the people who are rigging the system and a corrupt system, you know, it's just a scary prospect. It's also the idea that some of these ideas of socialism could be so mainstreamed and could take over one of our major political parties. That has to have a bad long-term impact, not just on the economy, but in everything about our country, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And by the way, I have a piece on FoxBusinessNews.com today called, you know, Democrats Feel the Burn. And my point was that, you know, this is not just about, you know, Bernie Sanders. I mean, this has been set up by the media, by our school system. The fact that we have so many millions of young people, Michael, that are attracted to this socialist idea of everything is free, government takes control of the economy, you lose your individual liberty, but the government's going to give you a safety net. That is a very destructive idea that I think is totally contrary to the American idea, don't you?
Of course. And by the way, you see that in the entire tendency of the Democrats and the left generally to blame the government for the coronavirus. To blame President Trump as if he should have magically snapped his fingers and appointed some commission beforehand to stop. We spoke to Alex Berzo, the American Council for Science and Health, who was talking about we will probably have the coronavirus around for a while, like one of the forms of flu that people get. And again, it can be tempered by a vaccine, things of that nature. What if you were speaking to President Trump, and I know you will be, he has to change, don't you think, after this week, the beginning of all of his rally speeches and other speeches about how great the economy is? I mean, it's got to be a little bit more cautious now, don't you think?
Yeah, probably will have to be. And, you know, that's why that circles back to what we talked about at this, you know, outset of this conversation, that Trump's number one powerful, you know, message for reelection is, you know, I've created prosperity. So this is a conundrum for Donald Trump. And I would, if I were him, I would simply lay out the facts for people and don't try to sugarcoat it and say, you know, this is, you know, looking like it's a potential public health crisis. We are taking every single, you know, prudent move to contain this. By the way, it's so interesting to me. Did you see, Michael, that I think it was Nancy Pelosi said, we're going to spend all this new money on the NIH and CDC, and we're going to take it from the Border Patrol. You know, it's like, what? You know, I mean, if you know, people want to feel like the border is secure now more than ever. And I'm very pro-immigration, as you are, but I think people want a sense of security, right? And so, you know, I do think that Trump has to be just very realistic with people and sound like a CEO who's dealing with the situation in a very adult way.
I think you're exactly right. Again, another one of your colleagues, Daniel Henninger, says he can't sound like a guy sitting on a bar stool talking about the situation. He has to be presidential, as Mike Pence certainly was, and the appointment of Dr. Birx, it seems to me, is also good news. Stephen Moore, I hope we'll have you back soon to talk about good news, good economic news. Meanwhile, there is lots of political news and news about a campaign that may be cruising toward collapse. No, it's not a Republican campaign. It's a Democratic campaign, but not the one you think. We'll get to that coming right up on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved show, still grappling with the political implications of the stunning losses on Wall Street. And you may say, well, I'm not an investor. I don't have anything invested in this. If you have a 401k, if you have a job, this impacts you, because when a company stock goes down very dramatically, their ability to expand, to provide raises, to hire people, the impact on the entire economy could be very significant. Now, let's hope it won't be. Let me sketch out a potential optimistic scenario. And talking to people that I trust who have a long-term record of perspicacity regarding markets, this is not ridiculous to assume. Let's assume that the outcome in South Carolina, which is in 2 days, I can't believe it. It's Friday to tomorrow, and then Saturday they have the primary in South Carolina. Let's assume that the outcome in South Carolina is very positive for those of us who dread the prospect of Bernie Sanders advancing and holding on to his position as front runner. And what kind of outcome would that be? If this shapes up in South Carolina anything like what the polling is showing right now, which is Joe Biden winning almost 3-1 over Bernie Sanders. That would be, it seems to me, a very good sign going into Super Tuesday. And let's say Super Tuesday, Bernie Sanders does not come out with the most delegates, where they have, 1,400 delegates that are going to be assigned on Super Tuesday. A third of all the delegates that are going to be chosen are going to be chosen this Tuesday. If that happens, I would strongly guess that the market will rebound. Because part of this, I do think, is politically related. We had a caller before who criticized the president, as Nancy Pelosi criticized the president, for saying that the Democratic debate had a negative impact on the market. I understand how you can argue against it. Here's what the president said at his press conference announcing the new coordinated approach led by Vice President Mike Pence to dealing with the coronavirus. Here is President Trump.
The flu in our country kills from 25,000 people to 69,000 people a year. That was shocking to me. And so far, if you look at what we have with the 15 people and they're recovering, one is pretty sick. But hopefully we'll recover. But the others are in great shape. But think of that, 25,000 to 69,000. Over the last 10 years, we've lost 360,000. These are people that have died from the flu, from what we call the flu. Hey, did you get your flu shot? And that's something. Now, what we've done is we've stopped non-U.S. citizens from coming into America from China. That was done very early on. We're screening people, and we have been at a very high level, screening people coming into the country from infected areas.
Okay, all reasonable, but then he does take off after what I agree with the president on this. It is shameful the way this entire matter has been politicized, particularly by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Listen.
Instead, she wants to do that same thing with Brian Chuck Schumer. He goes out and he says, the president only asked for $2.5 billion. He should have $8.5 billion. This is the first time I've ever been told that we should take more. Usually it's we have to take less. And we should be working together. He shouldn't be making statements like that because it's so bad for the country. And Nancy Pelosi, I mean, she should go back to her district and clean it up because it's the number one. If you look at percentage down, that was one of the finest in the world, and now you look at what's happening. And I'm just saying, we should all be working together. She's trying to create a panic, and there's no reason to panic because we have done so good. These professionals behind me and over here and over there and back here and in some conference rooms. I just left a group of 45 people that are the most talented people in the world. Parts of the world are asking us in a very nice way, can they partake and help them? So Nancy Pelosi shouldn't. And she knows it's not true. She knows all they're trying to do is get a political advantage. This isn't about political advantage. We're all trying to do the right thing. They shouldn't be saying, this is terrible. President Trump isn't asking for enough money. How stupid a thing to say. If they want to give us more money, that's okay. We'll take more money. Some Republicans think we should have more money, too. That's okay. We'll take more money. But they shouldn't demean the people that are on the stage who are the finest in the world. They're not demeaning me. They're demeaning the greatest healthcare professionals in the world.
Okay. President Trump, the idea, of course, that the Democrats can solve everything by spending more money. I'm not even sure what all of this money goes to. Of course, some of it is going to go to developing a vaccine, and that will probably be a positive development. I was mentioning before the idea that when you're talking about a market recovery and preventing the United States from slipping into a recession or a full-out bear market, I do think it would mean a great deal if the Bernie Sanders threat went away. Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, found this from back in October. Back in October, you may remember, there was a rough patch that the market went through. And CNBC highlighted this in their analysis. They said, another theory on why stocks are under pressure lately, the Warren correction. Wall Street analysts are saying that as Senator Elizabeth Warren rises in the polls, industries that she's vowed to challenge, including financial institutions, are taking a hit. There's a correlation between recent weakness in the stock market led by certain sectors and Elizabeth Warren's surge in the polls, according to some analysts and strategists on Wall Street. Now, that was back in October, and she was never actually, in any lasting sense, a front runner. And by the way, she is not as scary as Bernie Sanders because she says, I'm a capitalist in my bones. Bernie Sanders says he's a socialist. What you need to hear to understand why the Bernie Sanders campaign is so frightening is just listen to the way he was introduced. You have that, Jeremy, right there. By when he came to Tacoma, Washington on February 18th. And they have just released audio that they have this event. And Kashama Sawant, who is way even to Bernie Sanders' left, she's not a Democratic socialist. She's just a big capital S socialist. Listen to the way that she introduced Senator Sanders to a wildly cheering crowd at the Tacoma Dome. Listen.
And we need a powerful socialist movement to end all capitalist oppression and exploitation. Our immediate task is to go all out and win for Bernie. And to prevent the elite from rigging the primary against him. That's why my organization, Socialist Alternative, is calling for 1 million people in Milwaukee to have Bernie's back.
Okay, 1 million people on the streets in Milwaukee to try to intimidate the Democratic convention? Does this sound to anybody like a movement you want to be part of? 1 million people there. Milwaukee just suffered yesterday with a shooting at a Coors brewery. It's terrible. The idea of 1 million people in Milwaukee, don't go there in the summertime. We'll be right back on The Medved Show.
Listen to The Michael Medved Show.
Are you listening?
On the Dow Jones, a worst point drop ever in history. That's in more than 100 years. It's actually much more than 100 years. That's bad. And for the S&P, it is the worst day as a percentage loss since 2011. And look, none of this is good news. So what do? You have to get a historic perspective. And you have two more days to get a historical perspective with the complete Medved History Library. And even if you are suffering from looking at your 401k or whatever money you've had invested, hey, you get 75% off. That should be some comfort. This is a special flash sale that's been extended because of your great response. And this is 80 different titles that puts all of American history into perspective. Take a look at those titles by going to medvedhistorystore.com. They're all yours on USB flash drive or on a loaded onto an MP3 player that you will also receive. 75% off today and tomorrow only. Go to medvedhistorystore.com. That's medvedhistorystore.com. In terms of what is going on, and we are right at the verge of this South Carolina primary, it's very encouraging for me, at least, that the Biden campaign is reporting it brought in more than $1.2 million yesterday, the day after South Carolina's primary debate. And that was what was the best day of fundraising for the entire campaign. The campaign announced the $1,207,000 haul on Thursday in an email to supporters announcing a new goal to raise $3.5 million. The reason they're doing this is because the Biden campaign is broke. And this is one of those things that is very ironic, which is that people talk about, oh, Joe Biden, he's the establishment and all the rich and the fat cats, and they're all behind him. The Biden campaign doesn't have any staff and it doesn't have any money. And one of the problems he has going into Super Tuesday is precisely that. There is a piece in the New York Times, a very smart piece. It's by Thomas Kaplan and Katie Gluck. And I mention their names not because I know them. I don't know either of those two people. But this is an intelligent and insightful and very relevant piece of reporting. The headline is Super Tuesday and Liabilities Loom for Biden. Interviews with party leaders in half a dozen Super Tuesday states suggest that the same vulnerabilities that plagued Joe Biden's beginnings in Iowa, subpar organization, limited outreach to local Democrats, and a late start to campaigning, are holding him back next week in the states that will dole out a third of the total delegates in the Democratic primary. Mr. Biden's on-the-ground operations, these Democrats said, are easily dwarfed by those of Bernie Sanders and Michael R. Bloomberg, the moderate former mayor of New York, who was plainly cut into Mr. Biden's standings in some of those states, even as he faces his own mounting challenges in the race. And they quote Michael John Gray, who's the chairman of the Democratic Party of Arkansas. He says, Arkansas was, in my opinion, going to be a default Biden state. But he hasn't been in here. Of all the campaigns, the least organized in Arkansas is Biden. And you would have thought that Arkansas would be the kind of state that would be a gimme for Biden. It would be easy because it's not a left-wing state in any way. I mean, even the Democrats in Arkansas are not as far left as Bernie Sanders. One of Mr. Biden's biggest problems is that he is sorely outmatched when it comes to money. He entered February with just over $7 million on hand. It's less than half of what Bernie Sanders had. And he can't possibly keep pace with Mr. Bloomberg and another billionaire in the race, Tom Steyer. That financial disadvantage, writes the New York Times, has ramifications both for TV advertising and for staffing. Multiple North Carolina Democrats, for example, said they knew of only how many Biden campaign staff in North Carolina? That's one of the Super Tuesday states, a crucial one, more than 100 delegates. Jeremy, how many staffers do you think Joe Biden has in North Carolina?
His son.
There is only one. That compares to Bloomberg, who has 125 paid staff members there. And they get paid well. Bloomberg, people looking for work right now? The Bloomberg campaign is hiring, and they are paying green. In California, Mr. Bloomberg has 24 offices and more than 300 full-time employees. Sanders has 23 offices and just over 100 full-time employees, according to their campaigns. Biden doesn't have 23 offices like Bernie. He doesn't have 24 offices like Bloomberg. The Biden office, only one in East Los Angeles, the only one in the state, and his campaign declined to say how many staff members it had on the ground. Probably 10 or less. Again, what all of this goes to is the Biden campaign will say, well, we don't need those staff members because everybody knows and loves Joe Biden. Well, it didn't work so well in Iowa. Now, California and Texas are going to be very different states because Joe Biden has strong support, and I think that South Carolina is going to show this, from communities of color. That's what they're counting on. But what they are not counting on is the fact that Bernie Sanders, who has so much money, he has more money than any other candidate who isn't self-funding. In other words, other than Steyer, do you know how much money Steyer spent in Nevada for what, his fifth place showing, whatever it was in Nevada? He was not close. I think he won a couple of delegates. Steyer spent $25 million in Nevada. He spent $17 million in New Hampshire. But the money doesn't always sway results. What they're counting on is that, particularly for older African-American people and for Latino people, that they know who Joe Biden is. They know he was close to Barack Obama. I do think it would be enormously important in the interest of stopping Bernie Sanders if we heard something from President Obama. And yes, from Michelle Obama. Because, again, if they want to avoid seeing their legacy, such as it is, trashed by this really crazy and hateful socialist. And speaking of this crazy and hateful socialist, on the stage of a nationally televised debate, he assaulted the leader for some 14 years. He assaulted the leader of one of America's closest allies. He attacked Benjamin Netanyahu by name as a reactionary racist. And Bibi, who's facing his own election on Monday, believe it or not, the day before Super Tuesday, Bibi didn't like it. And he answered back, he said, he was asked about it, and he answered back, Bernie Sanders is wrong, but I don't want to say anything further because I don't want to be accused of interfering in the American election. And okay, but what kind of person does that? Apologizes for Fidel Castro, apologizes for Nicolás Maduro, and with his history of supporting Hugo Chavez and left-wingers everywhere. But he attacks the longest-serving prime minister in Israel's history as a reactionary racist? Is there a difference between being a nationalist and being a racist? There is absolutely. It's a difference that Bernie Sanders doesn't understand. He deserves no serious consideration for any position of responsibility in this greatest nation on God's green earth.